America, and to all of our listeners all over the world, including apparently our new masters, Russia, you are listening to yet another exciting episode of Let's Weekend. I am your comrade with the Mosky, Brandon Perkins, and joining me as always is Filippo D'Onofrio, Patrick Mifflin, and Chris D. Say well, da, everybody.
Da.
Da.
Oh, dear God. Usually, you know, this is the part of the show where we say shit happened.
Mm-hmm.
I think this week has been elevated to a completely different level.
Yeah, it went from shit to clusterfuck.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we'll get into it.
Yeah, we'll get into it. Honestly, it ain't nothing. If you've paid any attention to the news in your neck of the woods, no matter where you are, really, you know
there's
about
no
this.
There's no getting away from it.
No. And it has embarrassed all of us. Every fucking last one of us. But that will not be the only thing we'll talk about, because we also got some relatively okay stuff. We know that, for example, Adidas. We got some news from Adidas. You know, all day I dream about sports. That's not what it means. Including some history news. Apparently they found a mysterious unopened sarcophagus out in the middle of Egypt, which is unusual because, you know, they haven't found stuff like that in a while over there.
They usually robbed.
Yeah. Also, 3D printed gun. You want one? Well, you can have them now. Hooray.
Yay.
Also, one of my favorite cartoons from my childhood is going to be coming back soon. And weirdly enough, it may be extremely relevant somehow. Because if there's one show from back then that could somehow still manage to be relevant, it's this one. We also got some Netflix news, including the season trailer for pretty much everyone's favorite show on Netflix that isn't BoJack. And we also got our first look at the Titan show from DC. We have opinions. All this and more on this absolutely glorious episode of Let's Weekend. They suddenly have hankering for pierogi. All right, so, with all of that out of the way, Phil, what have you been up to this week?
Thank you, Colmad. Yeah, this week I started...
Tovarish is Tovarish, not Comrade. Comrade is English word. Tovarish is Russian.
Fair enough. So I started walking again this week, which is nice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's been...
Because now you're not, you don't feel like you'll melt into the pavement. So.
Yeah, that too, and, you know, also, like... not running into things is a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm working the cane now. It's actually rather liberating being able to get out there and, you know, not run into things. So that's
or have
fun.
Things run into you.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm actually kind of surprised at how much of a get the fuck out of my way symbol that thing is. It's just like...
Well, okay. When people hear that thing go tack, 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 tack on the side... walk, they know what they have to do. So
yeah, basically. Yeah. So it's like, yeah, okay. Yeah. Yeah, so I don't get dirty looks when I'm going around anymore, so that's nice. So that's kind of fun. I still got some work to do on, you know, the techniques. You know, I've only been at it for about 2 weeks, so still a lot of things I need to internalize and get more practiced with, but now I'm going to be out and about, and that's a very cool feeling, so enjoying that. In the off time, though, I've been still playing Shining Force 2.
Mm-hmm.
Got to a point now where I can say the battle is actually a challenge. So, yeah, it only took like 20 hours or probably not more than that. I'm about halfway through the game until I actually got to a battle that I felt challenged in. So, yeah. And the irritating part about it is it's like, the battle right before it was like super easy, and then it's like, oh, okay, now they're serious, you know. So Lots of fun there. I finally got Sarah, my priest, promoted to a master monk. She was mm-hmm. the last one that needed a promotion. Instead of promoting her to a vicar, I found her special quest item and got her as a master monk. So now she can not only heal, but punch dudes in the face. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that works really well, because she's actually one of the... She doesn't have a lot of hit points yet. She was just promoted, but she's doing a good bit of damage. So, yeah, even more people to have my offense with. And, you know, that's kind of pretty much it. It's been kind of an uneventful week for me, apart from, you know, looking at the news and wondering what the fuck is wrong with you people.
Mm-hmm.
So, what's right with us?
Yeah. So that's it for me. What about you, Pat?
As if we didn't know.
I am melting less, thankfully. Not due to any particular break in the temperatures, but just better airflow at my apartment.
Yeah.
I do not have the AC put in yet. That is hopefully going to happen in the coming days. Mm-hmm. But I've been playing a whole hell of a lot of Octopath Traveler.
You and about 100 and a couple tens of thousands of people all over the world, apparently.
I firmly believe this is game of the year until proven otherwise. Just going to get that right out in the open now.
That's unless, statement. You know, we manage... You know, unless, you know, Xseed manages to surprise us and we end up getting Trails of Cold Steel 3.
Honestly, I think the one that they could drop to really upset the game of the year chase would be Trails to Zero.
And but apparently they do, don't they? They announced they've got it, don't they?
I am not sure.
God, I hope so.
But... yeah, other than that, I've just been kind of, staying as close to the fans as possible and playing Octopath Traveler because, honestly, that's probably the best use of the summer I can find.
Mm-hmm.
No, that's been my week.
All right, Chris, what about you?
Yeah, so I think I bought my first ever Amazon Prime Day thing.
Mm-hmm.
I got a new 3DS XL. It was the Super Nintendo 3DS XL.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
Which looks real nice when it's opened up. On the outside, it's kind of ugly. Because the outside, you have to open it up all the way, and it's the top of a Super Nintendo.
Mm-hmm.
Which looks fine, but I really like the NES GBA SP that has, you know, the top... part of the clamshell is the top of the NES and the bottom is the bottom. I think they should have gone more for that sort of design on the...
That is one of the best special edition systems they've ever done.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the kind of thing that's like, it's kind of ugly on the outside, but I don't really care. On the inside, it actually looks like... it's kind of mostly there towards looking like the Super Nintendo controller. Like the paint job they use on the plastic actually kind of looks like the textured kind of Super Nintendo controller, but it doesn't feel like it. The face buttons are two colored, like the light purple and darker purple. I kind of wish they had the circles around the face button, the D-pad, like the Super Nintendo controller. But other than that, it's pretty good for the most part. I got it for $150. Compared to $200 normally, which is $10 cheaper than the Zelda 2DS XL I was looking at.
Mm-hmm.
The only real thing is the free game they give with it is Super Mario Kart,
which you already.
Have.
Well, I don't have it, but also I'm not gonna fucking play that game on a 3DS.
Yeah.
Like, how am I? I'm not gonna play multiplayer with that. I've never seen another person with a 3DS, much less play multiplayer. Local multiplayer.
Yeah.
So it's like, eh. Mm-hmm. But otherwise, transferring stuff over was pretty simple. I forgot that the way they do that stuff, where it transfers over all the system information, then you just pop your SD card, which I had to figure out how to get that out of there because I completely forgot. You had to, like, pop off the back shell.
Mm-hmm.
And the SD card is, the mini SD card is put in there. So I did that. I swapped it out, and All good. Now I can actually play Metroid Samus Returns.
Yeah, because you have a functioning R trigger.
Yeah, I have functioning shoulder buttons. And no interest in playing it right now. Because I've been playing mostly more Phoenix Wright. I finished all of the original episodes, the Edgeworth trial, which ended really, really well. Then they do the big like credit scene. They do a really nice credit scene where it's like a little bit afterwards, where it's the various people you met talking about what's happened to them since then. Like the guy in the hotel is now like a manager. Sort of thing, all that sort of stuff. And then it goes into the fifth episode, which is the one they made just for that DS version, which I'm in the middle of right now, and look forward to putting some more time into that. As for things not on the 3DS, I've been playing some of the about two games in the Steam Summer Sale. Snake Bird, which is a puzzle game where it's essentially a puzzle game based on the rules of Snake, where you're going around this level to collect a fruit that extends your. It's a snake bird, so essentially like a worm-like bird.
Yeah,
it has really nice animation to it. As he gets closer to the fruit, he just starts like licking his beak, that sort of stuff. As you get closer to the spikes, he starts like sweating, getting nervous, that sort of stuff. It's just nice. The puzzles are fucking hard as hell. I've completed maybe like five or six of them. I think like number six in there. And it opens up levels non-linearly. It's kind of on a grid. So you beat like one and it'll open up the others, both like to the top left, right, or bottom of it, depending on where you're at on this grid. So I've beaten stuff out of order. And like the sixth puzzle is like stumping me. I can get to one of the fruits, but can't figure out how to get back to the other. Once you get all the fruit, it opens up like a portal that you get out with. But that game is really hard as hell. But yeah, it's like a $5 game, something like that. So I think I got it for like $3 on sale, and so far it's been really good. I also got Into the Breach, which is a new game from the FTL devs, which is great. It is more of a turn-based strategy game, probably strategy RPG, I could also call it, where the levels you take are sort of set up kind of like FTL, where you are on this island and you have a number of different districts you can go to and do the mission that is there. Involving taking out these big, big creatures. Most have been bug type creatures, beetles and various other things that are all trying to take down either certain objectives or just take down buildings. And the overarching thing is you're trying to complete enough of the missions to open up the final boss mission, and then along the way you're trying to keep power on for the island, so as they take down buildings, that affects your power for the whole island, as well as completing objectives. There's like three different kind of currencies you're building. Some are for upgrading your ships, some are for buying stuff from a vendor you get after each island, which you can buy like special weapons for your mechs, whatnot. Yeah, so one of the best parts of Into the Breach is how they handle the UI. Being a strategy RPG, there are things about those games that are very obtuse, especially if they do not explain things all that well, which you can look back to a lot of the classics for how not to handle some of the more complex things. With Into the Breach, they actually do a great job with that stuff, because you can sort of hover your mouse cursor over almost any part of the UI, and it'll explain what's going on. So with each turn, you can see what the enemies are going to do the next turn, whether they're going to go after a building or try and attack your own units or the other targets. And you can sort of see that stuff up front and try and maneuver your guys around. But you can also like hover over them and see like, oh, this is going to do one damage on my guy if I let him hit. And if your guy has, you know, 5 pips of health, you're like, okay, I can take this if it means they're not going to attack, you know, this building or whatever. And they just do some great stuff, like explaining, like, you know, certain statuses, different parts of the map. You know, if you have like a goal of like save this building and you're not sure which one it is, you can hover over the buildings like, okay, this is the one that I need to protect. So if you see any monsters, go for that stuff. You can make sure to prioritize that sort of stuff. It just does all stuff in a way that, you know, a lot of strategy RPGs and even RPGs in general do not tutorialize all that well, or just make accessible even after the tutorials, in case you take a break and forget how things work. Yeah, so that is really just one of the nice aspects of that. And I've been playing that in like windowed mode, and so I've been modifying the resolution a bit to make it so I can, you know, have a video on while also just doing a couple rounds of that, which is really nice. I have not tried to dock it to the side of the screen, which I think would be something really cool if that actually does work. If not, that's something more devs should fully support in their games that actually work well for that. Because with Into the Breach, it's kind of just this grid in the middle of kind of a dark gray background with like UI stuff on the sides. You can easily just move that stuff around. When I do modify the window, it does move stuff around, so it should be able to handle it. But yeah, it's like these fucking clicker games, I should be able to just throw them onto the side and have browser or whatever on the other side. Yeah, Windows 10 is weird like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, as for console stuff, I've been playing Owlboy a good bit. I got that in the PSN mid-year sale. And that has been a lot of fun, especially once I got the hang of the combat, because initially I did not really get that it was a dual-stick shooter kind of game. So I was just shooting in the direction that Otis is moving with Giddy, and that makes the combat a lot harder. But once you do get the dual stick shooter stuff nailed down, especially because it locks on to enemies and items of interest, it makes it a lot easier, a lot more manageable, and makes it a lot easier to just enjoy the rest of the game. The thing I really like about that game is the art style and the animations, where Otis, especially in the intro, is just getting emotionally abused by his teacher, who just calls him out on every little thing and treats it like it's the worst thing that's ever happened. It's just overall an asshole to him that just makes me want him to suffer death at some point.
Yeah.
Just pass away. Because he deserves it for being a shitty teacher. Of Otis, who is mute.
Yep.
That's the other thing, is he's not able to talk or do much of anything on that front. So, you know, he tries his best and fails sometimes, and it's apparently the worst thing that could ever happen.
Yeah.
And that's just shitty.
Yeah.
But not shitty as far as the game's concerned, just that character is real shitty.
Yeah.
But yeah, I am at the point where the pirates came.
Yep.
And we're on the way to the capital, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm still fairly early, about an hour or so in. But yeah, that's been really good so far, and I look forward to putting some more time into it. That's kind of been it. How about you, Brandon?
All right. Well, you know what I've been playing.
Yes.
Me and about ten thousands of people all over the world, even though, and probably much more if, you know, they didn't screw up, you know, they didn't vastly underestimate the demand for it. Don't worry, we'll be talking about that on day zero.
But you know, Yosuke Matsuda has to be wearing a huge happy head right now.
Yeah. So yeah, I'm playing Octopath Traveler. I have finished the first chapter, which basically means I've got all 8 of the party members together now. And I mean, through the whole thing, I mean, I've only just started chapter 2. By the way, if for some reason you think that the first chapter is just a little too easy or whatever, don't worry. Because there is a massive difficulty spike as soon as you hit chapter 2. But so some of the things I've noticed as I've played it, people have been complaining that as they're playing it, that it doesn't seem any of the storylines are somehow linked together. If you pay attention, they actually are. Not in like really significant ways, but you can and see little connections here and there when they start showing up.
Forming.
Yeah. There's also, like, I also love the world building they're doing here because it happens in very small ounces. They'll start introducing to you, like, you know, like, for example, the Church of the Eternal Flame. That's, like, the main religion in this particular world. And depending on where you start at, you'll be slowly introduced to it, or if you are fucking the cleric, you're introduced to it right off the bat. Also, if you're playing, let's see, what's his name? The scholar?
Cyrus.
Yeah, Cyrus. If you, after you finish his chapter, he leaves the city, right? And then after he leaves the city, you see this hooded guy suddenly walk up from the bottom, apparently following him. And then you play Primrose, and you find out that this is one of the guys that killed Primrose's father.
Yep.
So, you know, so far there is no, like, one great enemy yet, but they're all definitely connected somehow. And I have a feeling that it's all going to be coming back to those dragon stones that the thief has to get for those rich mucky mucks.
Who are actually two of the coolest characters I've encountered so far.
Yeah. Let's see. Also, there is a lot more going on underneath the surface if you're willing to, like, actually put the time in. So when you get Cyrus, one of the cool things, like Cyrus's main ability, because all the characters have a main character ability. Like Primrose, for example, has her allure or seduction mechanic, where she can basically seduce any NPC that can be spoken to. A lot of them, as long as you know they're not children, they can be allure. Well, they use the term allure, but it's very, very mostly seduced. It doesn't matter what gender they are. You've got a really good chance. And it's not, and if you think that, you know, the women are going to be all like, oh, what a pretty dance, kind of following, no, there are totally women who are totally into you. But Cyrus in particular has an inquire or a query type of ability he has, where he can basically use his deductive detective skills, and you can basically find out the backstory of just about NPC you encounter. Sometimes they'll have, like, you'll be able to find, like, the location for a hidden item, or even a completely different side quest that you wouldn't have been able to find otherwise. And sometimes they don't. They just have an interesting backstory. But there's also that. There's
a Skyrim level of detail going on.
Yeah. There's also the... Oh, and like I mentioned, the allure ability, the great thing is that you're basically living in a world of badasses, so pretty much everyone you encounter has a really awesome ability they can bring to the battlefield.
And not realizing that was the point is the entire reason I hadn't used it much up until you mentioned that.
Yeah.
But yes, everyone you encounter is capable of kicking some degree of ass or another.
Yeah. There is, and I guess we might as well talk about the battle, the combat mechanics too. So yeah, it is classic you know, turn-based combat as you would expect for an old school JRPG like this. But it's definitely more involved than some in the past would be. For one thing, you know, much like with some of like the old some of the later Final Fantasies before they went, you know, full
ATB.
Yeah. They have sort of a thing where, like, depending on, you know, your status or your attacks, or you can be earlier in combat or later in combat. Sometimes the enemies can, you know, they can come back and hit you with a twofer. And sometimes, you know, you can slow them all down, or you can give one character enough so that they can actually, you know, have a twofer, or they can be quicker in the, I guess, lineup or whatever you want to call it. Also, another thing about it is the weak bar. I mean, not the weak bar, the weakness system that they've got. Basically, every enemy in this game has a set of weaknesses that will affect them. It'll be either a type of weapon, like, for example, an enemy may have, like, five weaknesses, and those weaknesses might be they are susceptible to sword attacks, to axe attacks, wind and fire attacks, or light attacks, you know, holy attacks.
Weapon types, elemental types.
Mm-hmm. And some of them can be and let me tell you, when you're in a party and you're trying to find the weak spots for these, it can be especially infuriating if it doesn't look like any of the people in your party at that given time can apparently access that much-needed last one on the list. But, oh, and another thing. Some of these characters, as they level up, they'll get additional abilities. That, like, for example, Cyrus, for example. Cyrus has a inspection ability where he can actually reveal one weakness of all the characters, of all the enemies before the battle begins. So it kind of gives you a bit of a heads up. Although
he's,
it's usually
analyze
not,
which unlocks another one on his turn.
And, God, it's... Oh, yeah, and as for the graphics, too, you can tell these guys were, like, really into Final Fantasy VI.
Yeah.
Well, that and Final Fantasy IV as well.
I'll go a step further, but I'll save that for the Day Zero update.
Yeah. The way that they approach the graphics, because, I mean, none of these sprites are actually static. They all move. You know, like unlike in, like in old Final Fantasy where they would go forward and then there'd be like an animation to represent like a slash attack or an arrow attack. No, they actually will do that, but the difference is, especially when it comes to like the boss characters, you can definitely see the inspiration because the sprites for the boss characters are gigantic.
Yep.
Like they are huge. They
just
damn near
16-bit Final Fantasy.
Yep. And they move too. Like they actually unlike in like, you know, original Final Fantasy VI when you're finally facing off against Kafka at the very end and it's just like that static image of him as like an evil angel. No, they actually move in this one. And one final thing before we move on. If you're worrying about whether or not any of these characters actually interact with each other, they totally do. If you've ever played any of the Tales games, they have the feature where, depending on where you are at any point, they'll bring up like a visual novel style thing where, and it's completely optional, you don't have to do it, but you can, they'll bring up a thing where the characters
and
will actually have...
And your experience will be better for it.
Yeah, and they will actually talk to each other. So, yeah, it's, God, it's a damn good game, it really is. And I'm not even in, I've only just started chapter 2. Like, I might actually have to go back and start grinding a bit, because holy shit, it is kicking my ass just almost immediately.
The first chapter 2 boss that I fought, I didn't lose to, but it was about an hour long battle, and I expended way more items than I wanted to.
Yeah. Like, at that point, it's like, okay, I might need to go and start fight some things. Because
unlock jobs too, that helps.
Yeah. But yeah, that's Octopath, and we're going to talk about much more in depth probably Sunday. So yes. Stay tuned for that. Because there is a lot going on in that game. And for the record, you can kind of tell how far a person who's doing a review for this game actually got in the game before they did their review, because, like, I'm already seeing, like, some review, seeing stuff in this game from where I remember reading some reviews, and, like, they didn't get this far, did they?
Nope. Yeah, this will definitely expose people.
I will admit that this game is kind of a slow burn at first, as far as the first chapter is concerned, but it opens up pretty quickly as soon as chapter 2 commences, so, you know, don't worry. All right, so, anybody got anything else they want to add before we move on?
Nope, I'm good.
Buy Octopath, all right. Traveler.
Yeah, buy Octopath, buy it now. If you can't get a physical copy, get a digital one, because
you will not regret it.
Yes, you will not regret it. All right, so I guess now it is time for everyone's favorite part of the show, Brandon's Random Factoid. And you know what? We were keeping on the old school gaming, so I thought we would do a little bit. We would do this particular episode of Brandon's Random Factoid, this particular installment, about a piece of classic gaming history. Because the shit that we're going to have to go into after we get into the show proper, we're kind of going to need a little bit of wistfulness here, is what I'm saying, you know? So I would like to take a journey back in time. Will you take a journey back in time with me? Back to the days of the SNES. Back when we were in the 16-bit era, and it just seemed like the world was our oyster, and so many possibilities were out there. And it was also the time when probably the Japanese gaming market was really beginning to flourish. And we got so many great titles and so many great teams and studios and designers that came about. Many of them would continue to this day. Some of them would disappear. And then some of them, like this studio I'm going to be talking about today, just kind of had a slow fade into non-existence in a very Japanese melancholic type of way. So let's talk about once upon a time. Once upon a time when there was a Japanese studio known as Quintet. Ah, Quintet. So for those who don't know, Quintet first came onto the scene back in the Super NES era with the game that was, God damn, was it so unusual. Like, it's, legitimately, I do not think there has been a game like it, except for, you know, the sequel that it had, but it was called ActRaiser. Now, who here remembers ActRaiser?
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah.
ActRaiser, in ActRaiser, you played God, or a God.
Mm-hmm.
They were always kind of vague about that, and whether or not that was Nintendo of America's standards and practices getting involved, I don't know. But so you played a god, and you come back to a play to your world, and you notice that it's kind of shit. It's just falling apart, and that your enemy, who, for lack of a better word, we're just going to call Satan, has been getting the upper hand. So your job is to, with the help of your little cherub angel buddy, who sort of acts as your hand, your right cursor. Hand in this, yeah, your cursor, really. You have to rebuild your world. So it's one half city management, basically. You have to rebuild it with, you know, towns and cities and temples and all that stuff. And of course, while this is happening, your little cherub guy also has to act as a guardian to, because there's a point where he actually starts like shooting projectiles and has to fight off against other enemies, but that's not really the real action part. No, the real part, the part that pretty much I think most people actually remember, is the side-scrolling action mechanic, because at that point, God then has to take over a a heroic statue and start beating the hell out of things with a sword projectile attack. And he has to fight bosses and all this stuff. And you have to keep doing this until you finally fight Satan himself. And then the game ends, and it ends in probably just what would become sort of just an overall theme of Quintet. You see that your cities are now thriving, but you go to the temple and you realize that there's nobody there. The world has moved on.
Mm-hmm.
They've realized that they don't need religion anymore. And the best part is, the game points out that this is a good thing. This means you've done what you were supposed to do. That they have evolved to the point where they don't need religion anymore. And so you disappear into the sky forever. You know, until Hackraiser 2 came along, yeah. And I never played that one, so.
That one was good, but they basically took out the city building part of it entirely.
Yeah.
It was just basically a pure action game.
Yeah. That was sort of their first major title. The other one that came after that was Soul Blazer. And Soul Blazer was an action RPG. It was published by Enix. You know, this was before Square and Enix merged. So Enix was still independent and was still the Dragon Quest company.
Yeah.
You end up taking the role of a guy who suddenly hears the voice of God. And the voice of God is telling him to go out and kill shit. Hmm. And basically you have to go around freeing six villains. And then during this point, your character actually falls in love with a woman named Lisa. And then you find out that the world you're living in is actually kind of a post-apocalyptic one because a guy named Dr. Leo has now been stuck in a place called the World of Evil. And apparently after he had made a machine that could actually contact Death Toll, which is the big villain of this game. So then you reach the World of Evil, you defeat him, and then you go back to heaven. But see, here's the thing. It's pretty much known by this point that you are essentially a heavenly super person, because as it turns out, you're not a human. You're actually like a divine servant of God. And so after you do this, you return to heaven. You find out that you're not really that happy in heaven because you can't be with Lisa. So you go back down and get to reunite with Lisa. But the thing is, you have no previous memory of your time with Lisa. And you'll just need to play the game to find out where all goes. So
very much worth playing.
Basically... Oh, yes, it is. It's a great game. So the next game, other than Hackraiser 2 they would release, is a game I'm actually pretty fond of, even though it's a real outlier, Illusion of Gaia. Mm. Illusion of Gaia is bizarre.
Yes.
In fact, you do find out towards the end there's a reason why it's so bizarre. Because as you're playing the game, you start to realize there's like all these weird historical and... like real-life historical figures and places that start showing up, but they make absolutely no sense in the context of what you're playing in. Because for all intents and purposes, you're playing in a fantasy world, but for some reason, these real-life places start showing up. There is a reason. You do find out why. I'm not going to spoil it, because I genuinely like this game, and I want people to play it. But... God damn, is it weird. Like, it is just straight up bizarre. So, after that, we had...
the only thing I will add is that if anyone goes out and explores these games because of this segment, if you're playing Illusion of Gaia, make absolutely sure you kill everything in every dungeon.
Yes. It will definitely help. For very obvious reasons, as you will find. Let's see, after that we had, what do we have? We had Robotrek. It is a, well, we call it RoboTrek. In the original Japanese, it's called Slapstick, because it's actually supposed to be a funny game to appeal to a younger audience. And it's, in many ways, people sort of call it to sort of being one of the predecessors to Pokemon, because it has a mechanic where the combat is through these three random robots that you find, and you have to keep finding parts and help them evolve and get better. You know, something that Pokemon would sort of take and make. It, also, if you've played like Dragon Quest Monsters, it's also very similar to that. And that's about it for that. But probably like the last like great game they did before they just sort of decayed into nothingness. Well, a game they released for originally, I guess it was a Super Nintendo, called Terranigma. And Terranigma is sometimes called like the last game of what they sometimes call the Soul Blazer trilogy, even though they're not really related at all, except for like vague similarities to the gameplay. So Terranigma was a, God, let's see, I actually never played Terranigma. I never got a chance to play it, because right around this time I was moving on to the Nintendo 64.
I also don't think Terranigma came out in the U.S.
Yeah, I don't think it actually ever, well, it never came to the U.S. It did come out to the PAL.
Yeah, it came out.
That's where I know it from, because of Super Play.
Yeah, but it never made it to the U.S. So sadly, I never got a chance to play. But basically, you play in a fictional Earth that's basically a hollow Earth. And if you play the game, if you actually see people play this game, like on YouTube, it is really, really kind of off-putting at first, because it's a hollow Earth, which means that, well, you remember how when you played Halo, you had the weird where you were basically on the Halos, which are basically ring worlds where everything is inside of the rings.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, imagine that, but it's a sphere.
Okay.
That's Terranigma. Honestly, that's kind of all that I can say about Pat. Can you fill in the blanks here?
Not really.
Yeah, me neither. If you really want to, Extra Credits did a really good segment they did entirely on the history of Quintet, and they talk about this game. And this is really kind of the last great sort of thing that they would do. After this, the next game they would release, they actually would sort of go into a kind of, I guess you could say, free, sort of free, where they started like going out and helping other companies. Because the next game they would work on that they came out was the Grandstream Saga. And I don't know how many people remember that one. Yeah, they did the scenario for that one. The game was developed by Shade, but they worked on the story for it.
Now I'm going to have to hunt down a copy.
Yeah. Grandstream Saga, I actually played that back in the day, and the thing I remembered most about that is that nobody has a face, and it's really goddamn creepy. let me clarify that. Obviously, the actual characters, are, you know, their artwork and their sprites and stuff have faces, but the in-game character models, no, they do not. And it is really off-putting. So after that, they would work on stuff like Planet Laika. They did development support on Shenmue. They did work on Godzilla Generations Maximum Impact. And as far as I know, the last game they actually did any work on was Inuyasha, The Secret of the Cursed Mask.
Oh, wow.
And that was in 2004. And after that, they basically just kind of slowly disappeared. Like in 2003, they took their message boards offline, and then 2008, their website finally disappeared. So For a short time, for a very short time, we had Quintet. And while they were around, they were good. And, and what made them stand out was just the weird, their approach to very deep topics of, divinity, good and evil, the nature of evolution and stuff like that.
Yep.
And, in ways that, Square Enix could only wish they could approach adequately. But, for a while we had Quintet. They're gone now, but their legacy lives on in a handful of just really outstanding games.
They're gone, but their games are not.
Yeah. No. And that has been yet another installment of Brandon's Random Factoid.
Good one.
Yeah. Again, I have to ask,
what brought this on?
Extra credits. They did an episode fairly recently on Quintet, and I was like, fuck, I got to talk about these guys again.
Okay. I wasn't sure if you were playing some of their games right now.
Oh, I have been playing Illusion of Gaia on my SNES emulator here on my computer, but might be partly because of it. All right, so it's now time to start the show proper and dive in because fuck me. Just fuck me. Title of the episode, just fuck me.
I'm not sure if I can put that in the show title, but hey, we'll see.
We'll figure something out.
Yeah.
Something to get across the general just feeling of just wanting to just throw up your hands and say, man, fuck me. Well, at this point, if you've really been doubting or not, if there is a Russian connection or not, you can basically say, well, there is no question anymore. It's there. There is no ambiguity anymore. The only questions left is what the exact nature of it is. Because this week, President Trump went to Helsinki, had a thing with Putin, and he basically threw the entire military and intelligence community under the bus. And keep in mind, this all came at the time when the Mueller investigation had indicted 12 Russian nationals. And then we found out that the very day the Helsinki conference took place, a certain individual was arrested for spying for the Russians. That has been heavily involved in GOP politics for a few years now. We'll be getting to her. Trust us, we're getting there.
There's a lot to unpack this week.
And also, before we go any further, I want you to know this one thing. Trump has known about this shit since 2017.
At least.
He got a confidential memo from his intelligence, from the FBI and the CIA telling him that the Russians did, in fact, hack and try to manipulate our voting mechanisms to get him into office. That is no longer a question.
Putting two and two together and lining up with like the weird thing where the Trump campaign all of a sudden dropped like marketing efforts in certain states, moved them to others. Out of the blue, like
not
in
a good
October.
Look.
Yeah.
Around the same time when the reports came out with this with the indictments that they had stolen voter rolls and stuff like that in those specific states.
Yeah.
Around that time.
This is also starting to line up a bit with some of the shit I read in Fire and Fury, because the one thing that Trump does have is he does have a very small, and pretty much the one thing that's been able to protect him so far is that he has this very small bit of plausible deniability. And that plausible deniability is that, as I've said before, in the Trump administration, Donald Trump is not the captain of the ship. Donald Trump is the steering wheel, and all the sailors are fighting over which direction they want to turn him. But this week, we know for sure that he knows something about it. He got up next to Vladimir goddamn Ivan Drago Putin. And while the world was watching, they asked him, will you now acknowledge that Russia, and will you tell Mr. Putin that we know you have try to affect our elections. Don't do it again. And what does Donald Trump do? He pussies out.
He both sides it.
Yeah, he both sides it. And then he said, you know, they've been telling me that Russia did it. I don't know why they would. And by the way, that whole mistake about over whether or not he said would or wouldn't, it is absolutely incidental when you hear the whole statement in context.
Yeah.
So
he's trying not to get impeached.
And yeah, also just ranting about the FBI server.
Yeah, the server. Where's the server? Where are the servers?
Which is, I think he's referring to the DNC email server, which has nothing to do with anything.
It also doesn't help that, you know, the Trump campaign used the information that was in that DNC hack specifically to help him win. So that's not really a defense on your part, Donald. So as you can imagine, people in this country and all over the world were fucking gobsmacked. Because you literally had the president of the United States basically pussy out in front of the leader of a rival government. I'm not going to say rival nation, because obviously the Russian people aren't exactly sure of everything their government does, and they, you know, their media is mostly state-controlled, so... Yeah.
The Russian government is not our friends. The Russian people, we can, you know, we're cool.
Yeah. It's so anything else...
60
I'm
years,
not,
70 years since the Cold War started?
Yeah.
They've not been an ally at any point.
Well... I mean, World War II. They were allies with World War II.
I mean, since then. Since the Cold War started.
Yeah. And again, it's not the Russian people. It wasn't the people of the Soviet Union. It was government rivalries, you know. And now that we now know for a fact that there is a Russian connection, he basically went up before everyone and pussied out. And everyone from just world leaders all over the world, politicians, both Democrat and Republican, including people you wouldn't expect to, basically just leaning back and are absolutely just shocked that he would do something like this.
Yep. And yeah, it's such a stupid thing to do.
Yeah.
I
mean, he basically just dug his own grave there.
Yeah.
I mean, this is it, folks. This is what's going to get him. We thought that the fucking shit, the concentration camps at the border were going to be the thing that got him. No, this is what's going to sink him finally. At this point, you can very safely say he's not going to get a second term.
Yeah.
It's not going
to happen.
We'll
see if he gets a complete single term.
Yeah. People you don't expect, fucking hardcore Republicans, Mitch McConnell of all people, basically said, no, this is not right.
Yeah, he wasn't all that. He was a very milquetoast. The second link has a comment of his. I think the Russians need to know that there are a lot of us who fully understand what happened in 2016, and it really better not happen again in 2018. That's just like,
incriminating?
Don't do it again, or we might get mad.
Yeah.
That's as damning as he gets.
That sounded like foreshadowing to me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, some of the quotes here, like, the only person that really had his side is Mike Pence.
Yeah.
Because
here's
Trump
the thing. The reason Mike Pence was okay with it is because Mike Pence is also involved in it.
Yeah. he's like, President Donald Trump stands without apology as leader of the free world. It's like, that's not what he did at all.
That's all he did. Was apologized.
Yeah.
And kowtow.
He ceded. Mm-hmm. To Putin.
And that wasn't the only thing he ceded to Putin, too, because apparently he may have agreed, even though his a lot of his administration didn't know about it. He basically agreed to an international security deal with Putin.
Yeah, Russia was saying, oh yeah, we reached some sort of deal. Everyone's like, wait, what? What deal? And also, like, there are other potential deals. Talking about handing over diplomats?
Yeah. Russia, including, I don't think it was just diplomats either. There was also that gentleman, Bill Browder.
Yeah.
Let me tell you something.
Currently a Russian campaign going to tear him down.
Yeah, because here's the thing. Vladimir Putin hates Bill Browder. And I mean, he hates Bill Browder. He hates Bill Browder the way the devil hates God.
So basically, if Trump hands the guy over, we're never going to see him again.
He has come out and saying, no, if you hand me over to Putin, I will die. Hmm. Because he's one of the principal authors of, I believe it's called the McClinsky or the Machlinsky Act, which basically means that a lot of Putin's own money will never leave American shores because of some of this shit. Hmm. And then finally, just to top it all off, Trump wants Putin to come to the White House again.
Yeah.
And you thought any of the protests we've had before were huge?
Oh, there will be blood.
There will be no
scorched earth
the streets.
Yeah,
it will be just bodies on bodies,
bodies on bodies on blood on tissue on everything.
But yeah, it was interesting to see some of the responses from people. Like Nancy Pelosi brought up blackmailing.
Mm-hmm.
One of the first people to actually bring that up. Former CIA director John Brennan. Let's see. Donald Trump's press conference performance in Helsinki rises to and exceeds the threshold of high crimes and misdemeanors. Mm-hmm. It was nothing short of treasonous. Not only were Trump's comments imbecilic, he is wholly in the pocket of Putin. Republican patriots, where are you? And James Clapper says, but more and more I come to a conclusion after the Helsinki performance and since, that I really do wonder if the Russians have something on him. These are people that would know because they're part of the intelligence community.
Yeah.
Which all came together unanimously, said, yeah, they fucking did this. They're not letting up. They're going to keep doing this. And Republicans seem to have zero interest in trying to protect against it.
Well, there's a reason, and you're going to find out a little later why.
Yeah, the Democrats were immediately trying to do things like bring in the translator from the secret meetings that they had no press in with Trump and Putin.
Yeah.
Like, well, what happened there? Because we really need to know.
Yeah.
He's trying to fucking sell off this country. We have a right to know.
Piece by piece. Yeah.
I think that ship has already sailed.
Oh, that one sailed long ago.
And things like there are funds that are set up to help protect against attacks against the voting machines and all that. And guess who's trying to take all that funding away? The GOP.
Yeah. But before we get any heavier into this, because we got another story about the Russian connection to start us off in the proper show proper, we'll talk about our Hero of the Week. And our Hero of the Week manages to combine two of my favorite things in the world. My home state of Georgia and Florida Man. So, in my home state of Georgia, in Savannah, around 11 p.m. June 30th, this woman who was at a pizzeria, I think, I don't know if she was, she was a waitress. Yes, she was a waitress, one of the waitresses working there.
Vinnie Van Gogh's pizzeria.
Yep, in Savannah. She's doing her stuff there, and then this 31-year-old piece of beach trash named Ryan Cherwinski walks up behind her and gropes her ass. So she then turned around and tackled him.
Yep, she grabbed him by the back of the shirt, pulled him over, and just fucking threw him to the chair that's sitting by her.
Yeah,
she tackled him down.
Mm-hmm. Release the beast.
Yep, you can watch the videos.
Yeah.
I think even when the BuzzFeed Hero was talking to the cops about the video, they say because it's part of the investigative file, they cannot provide it, but I can say that the video on Reddit is the same video our officers viewed.
Yep. So she's a server of justice.
She's a server of ass.
Served his ass to him.
Yeah. And as for as for the woman herself, let's see. Let's see, what's her name? That's key. Taking into custody. Blah, 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 blah. Was unable to find it. I guess we don't know because I can't find it on this. So I guess because it's like an ongoing investigation, they're just not releasing her name.
And I think she's just not interested in.
Yeah, she basically said, "Look, he got what was coming to him, and I just want to live my life."
Yeah, she knocked him down. Told her coworkers to call the cops.
Yep,
they came by, busted him, took him to jail. This happens on July 2nd is when he got out on bond on $2,500. Mm-hmm. Charged with, I think sexual battery.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. And he looks like an absolute douchebag in his little arraignment photo there.
Play stupid games, win stupid prizes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like I said, a 31-year-old piece of beat trash.
Yeah. And I get some more of this stuff.
Yes.
Because these guys need to know that...
you can't get away with this shit.
Yeah. These women aren't going to take it anymore.
Yeah.
No.
Pick up the D. Snyder.
Hmm. Yeah. All right. Well, that was our hero of the week. So, now we're going to the proper show proper, and get ready, folks, because it's about to get amazing. So, you remember that Russian connection we were talking for? Well, we know who she is. Her name is Maria Butina. She is an Eastern European national who was working for the Russian government with a contact with the Russian government to infiltrate the GOP and conservative politics in general in order to get favorable views and attention for Russia and Eastern Europe. And you know what one of her major targets were? The National Rifle Association.
Yep. Shocking. Some pictures of her with various figures with the NRA.
Yeah, including Wayne LaPierre himself.
Yep.
We now also know that several Russian nationals directly gave lots of cash to the National Rifle Association.
They got branches in Russia.
Yeah.
Which I saw photos of these events, and it's weird seeing the thing on there. It's like, the right to bear arms. It's like, I don't know that that's the thing in Russia.
No, that's not really... I don't think that's a thing.
No, I actually know for a fact that it's not a thing over there.
Seems like a market you probably don't want to go into unless you're being paid tons of money.
Yeah.
We also know that on top of that, there's another major political area that they had poked their asses into. You may have heard of this thing that goes on here every year in the United States called the National Prayer Breakfast. Mm-hmm. It's run by an organization called the Fellowship. Basically, it's sort of a very obvious example of why church and state should remain separate, because it's pretty much become a weekend-long lobbying effort with Russians and Eastern European governments. In fact, one of the people that are really involved in the Fellowship has gotten a lot of money has used sort of the Fellowship's money to go out on large vacations, most of which have been in Eastern Europe.
Shocking.
Oh, and did we mention that Maria Butina is also a honeypot?
That's well documented.
Yeah,
which makes that photo
she basically flirted. Yeah, go ahead.
The photo op she took with Rick Santorum really funny.
Oh, yes. Oh man, just we can only scratch the surface with the time we've got because holy
see who
shit.
Her partner is?
I forgot his name.
Paul Erickson.
Yeah, he
from South Dakota, who once did public relations for John Wayne Bobbitt.
Yep, he is her contact with Putin and the Russian government.
Yep.
Or her go-between, I guess you could say.
Diggity.
And like we said, this woman was in fact indicted for acting as a Russian agent without the knowledge of, without registering with the government. So, and she's been around for a while, folks. Mm. We are knowing now how involved and how deeply involved she was.
Yeah.
Oh, it is going to get... It's just beginning. Like
yeah.
we've Remember how we told you earlier that this is what's finally going to unravel it? If you've been waiting for like a year and a half now, desperately waiting for the avalanche to finally come, you don't have to worry. It's here now.
Yeah, definitely read all this and realize the Americans is just, this is only a TV show. Uh-huh. This shit is real.
Yep.
And, but yeah, did you see the stuff from the Sacha Baron Cohen new episode?
I haven't watched that because I don't have Showtime.
Well, there's a 10-minute clip that I think some media outlet put up on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
It's of the segment where he is trying to push. He's pushing himself as like a former like Israeli army guy. Who's talking about arming the kids.
Arming toddlers. Yeah, the one where he's arming toddlers.
Yeah, like 12 to 4-year-olds.
Yeah.
And actually
he got people like Trent Lott and everyone basically saying.
So many people took the bait.
Yeah.
Joe Walsh.
Mm.
And then has them do like actual promotional like videos for this thing.
Mm-hmm.
Of like where they've put like toys stuff on the guns. Like stuffed toys.
And like, it's at that point you have to think some of them have to at least come realize that they've been duped, right?
Like Joe Walsh said he was.
Mm-hmm.
But some
like
of
they can't be this stupid, right?
I don't know. Some of the actual interview stuff he did, like guys are like, yeah, I haven't really mentioned this much, but this is the perfect idea I've been thinking about, but haven't really found the right people to push the idea of arming kindergartners.
Yeah, so some of them are 100% serious about it.
Yeah.
So yeah, if you've wondered,
he also looks fucking stupid.
Yeah,
because he's got like facial stuff on.
Yeah, and somehow they still fall for it.
Yeah,
like well, that's
it looks ridiculous what he has on.
Mm-hmm.
Like almost like he's trying to be like a human action figure.
Yeah. And for the record, I think it needs to be pointed out. If you've been wondering why the NRA just kind of went nuts, like if you've been thinking, it's like, it's like, you're wondering, how can the NRA just be so fucking loony now? Well, I mean, loonier. And they used to be. Well, we're kind of getting an idea why. And we'll just leave it at that.
Yep.
Yeah, so. All right, so next story. So there was that awful shooting that happened in Las Vegas, the largest mass shooting in American history by a single person. Yep. A lot of people killed, a lot of people injured by this one douchebag in his hotel room with a bump stock repeating rifle. Well, MGM Resort, you know, the people that own the hotel.
Bay.
Yeah, the hotel that this guy was doing his sniping from. They've actually started suing victims of the Las Vegas shooting so that they can protect themselves from liability claims.
Yeah, business-wise, it makes sense.
Morals-wise, it looks awful.
Yeah. Oh, we've sued everybody that was a victim of that shooting.
Yeah.
That's a great PR move.
Yeah.
But yeah, they have filed federal lawsuits against 1,000 victims and their relatives from that shooting.
On what basis?
Let's see. Yeah, noted that, let's see, the company's lawsuits filed in federal courts in Nevada and California noted that more than 2,500 victims and related persons have either filed or threatened to file complaints against MGM, claiming negligence and responsibility for death, injury, and emotional distress related to the massacre.
Mm-hmm.
So they are very much fearing getting tons of these suits, alleging that they should have done more to stop this, and that they're responsible for it in a way that's, you know, maybe somewhat, but I don't know about, you know, full responsibility for it, because he seemed to just have the ability to hide these weapons pretty well.
A lot of them,
yeah.
By the way. We have to repeat that. This dude had a lot of guns in that room.
Yeah. And that is sort of what this is all about. Sort of, they want to not have years of drawn out litigation that just hemorrhages money for them, for something they may not necessarily think they're
responsible for.
Yeah.
So instead, they're filing litigation, which will probably end up being long and drawn out.
Well, this is sort of a thing they're doing with the government to get like protection. Or they're not necessarily like suing each individual person. They're like naming them as like, we would like to not
Be sued by the following people.
People.
Hmm. Yeah.
Like they're naming it as defendants or whatever it is. So it's very much like a business thing that just PR-wise looks awful.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is not a good look. I think they're going to lose a hell of a lot of business doing this.
Yeah.
It's just
All right.
Yeah, my son or daughter or whoever relative happened to be there, absorbed a bullet, and now I'm getting sued. Well, why is this fair, you know?
Yeah. But yeah, so and we're about to get a little bit darker. So next story. About 30 years ago, a little girl by the name of April Tinsley was very brutally murdered.
Raped and murdered.
Yeah, that is just the least I'm going to say about it, because holy shit. And for 30 years, this murder has been basically completely unsolved. Basically, it's been a cold case. Then, this week, after 30 long years, they finally found the person responsible.
Yep. The same day the cold case was to be examined during a primetime crime documentary.
Mm-hmm.
Who is the one that was doing this series? Investigation Discoveries on the case with Paula Zahn.
Paula Zahn, okay.
Yeah. So the killer is a man named John Miller, 59 years old, arrested on Sunday, and this is in Indiana. So you want to know how they found out?
Sure.
Because he, over the 30 years, he's been taunting the police.
Yeah, sending them these really god-awful letters.
Yeah, so...
And by god-awful... I mean, both in a matter of being disturbing and a matter of, you know, basic grammar.
Yep. So the killer left his DNA with the body, but they could not find a match. Obviously, 30 years later, we have much better technology for DNA analysis. Let's see. First thing happened in 1990. Our killer scrawled a message on a barn door. I kill 8-year-old April Marie Tinsley. I will kill again. 2004, 16 years later. The killer left threatening notes, photos, and used condoms on 3 girls' bicycles and in a mailbox in Fort Wayne area. Picture showed a man's nude lower body. DNA and the condoms matched that found on April's body.
No, that's not just good hubris.
Next, let's see. Hi, honey, I've been watching you. One note released by the FBI read. I am the same person that kidnapped, raped, and killed April Tinsley. You are my next victim. So they got a break in the case this past May, when a detective arranged for DNA testing analysis to be done on one of the suspects' evidence sample at Parabon Nanolabs. On July 2nd, they were able to narrow the DNA sample to 2 brothers, one being Miller, so Miller, his brother. So they started surveilling him. July 6th, they went through his trash to find items bearing his DNA, and they found 3 used condoms. So they did a DNA test, confirmed it was him, and served him, or arrested him on this past Sunday. On Sunday morning, police explained to Miller that they had connected his DNA to the slaying. When asked to explain what happened to Tinsley, Miller looked at police and said, "I can't." So he basically admitted to it.
Play stupid games, win stupid prizes.
Especially when you leave your DNA just fucking everywhere, like
and handing it over.
Yeah,
and also taunting everybody.
Yes,
with that fact.
Yeah,
Just damn. It's that part of it that is just.
Well, hopefully he'll have a nice room in the pound me in the ass prison.
No, this dude's going to end up in like special, what they call. I guess I don't know what they call it. They call it like special cases or something. The places where they specifically put like sex offenders like that because they know what will happen if they're put into general population.
Yeah, get solitary confinement.
Yeah.
Have you seen what Paul Manafort's jail looks like?
Isn't it the one that
he's basically got like an apartment?
Yeah, it's a hotel room.
Laptop,
basically.
Internet access. You know, a bathroom, a shower.
They call it Club Fed for a reason.
Yeah.
Like
and the judge is basically like, you know what? Fuck you, dude. We're gonna. Just, So,
I'm
right.
Glad he's behind bars, because he fucking deserves it.
Yeah. Oh, God, yes. Next up, kind of weirdly connecting with what we were talking about earlier. So, some gun rights activists reached a settlement with the Department of Justice this week. And it's going to allow people to put out designs online for 3D printer guns.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is pretty crazy.
Yeah.
So starting on August 1st, they're going to be allowed to post these gun plans online.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Settlement ends a multi-year legal battle. Started when Cody Wilson, who describes himself as a post-left anarchist, posted plans for a 3D printed handgun called the Liberator in 2013.
Mm-hmm.
These are single shot pistols because it literally just falls apart or explodes.
Yeah, that's the thing. The materials they do for 3D printing that they use now, they're not exactly solid enough.
ABS
yet
plastic.
They're not exactly solid enough yet to handle the kind of
same stuff they make Lego bricks out of.
Exactly.
Which. So everybody that stepped on one knows, they can do damage.
Yeah.
The only metal parts are the firing pin and the piece of metal included to comply with the Undetectable Firearms Act.
Mm-hmm.
So the U.S. State Department told them to take down the plans, said the plans could violate international traffic in arms regulations.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so say that someone in another country, someone that the U.S. doesn't sell weapons to, could download the material and make their own gun. He sued the government and I guess came to a settlement.
Yep. At least for now.
Yeah. The government agreed to pay almost $40,000 of his legal fees and refund some registration fees.
Yeah, so on the one hand, this does kind of, I guess, democratize it to a certain extent. Because, imagine, being able to get a bunch of these in a place like, I don't know, Iran or something, and being able to topple their government or something like that, you know? So, yeah, on the one hand, that's perfectly cool. Also, of course, as I've also mentioned, the plastic that they use for 3D printing is still not exactly strong enough to handle the kind of... Yeah, weapons discharges. There's a reason they're made out of steel.
Yeah, but this is just the first step.
Eventually, as
3D printers are gonna get better.
Which makes you realize. I think this won't this eventually just basically mean the death of the arms industry. Basically,
pretty much.
Once you've got you're at a point now where you don't have to actually purchase. An M16 or like a Smith & Wesson, you can just print a Smith & Wesson by yourself on a 3D printer and not really I'm thinking maybe Smith & Wesson would try to do something where they will patent all their stuff and then you have to go through pay to get it or something, but we know how the internet is, as soon as they start doing and that shit'll be completely everywhere on the dark web within the next hour.
Yeah, and you know, I'm sure it's going to go like that Charles Stross novel where you know, 3D printers have to be licensed, and they will only print verified designs and all
yeah.
that good stuff, and it will not by
that,
do anything.
But at that point, though, the technology will be out there, and it's too late.
Yeah.
So, yeah, because these are untraceable guns.
Yeah.
That have no serial.
So be looking for the NRA to suddenly become really okay with gun control when it comes to 3D printing. Because
yep.
where do you think their bread and butter comes from?
Yeah, basically. So good luck with that. Also, if you do 3D print a gun, you might want to be a little bit careful when you fire it. You're not going to get many shots.
No.
Yeah, and you also might want to wear like some gloves, you know, maybe a hazmat
goggles.
Or some padding, some goggles, because that thing's basically going to go crumble in your hands, basically.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So, next up.
That's an undocumented feature of it, though, because with conventional firearms, you just get the bullet. With this, you get shrapnel.
Yep.
Yeah, but usually the shrapnel's coming at you.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That might not be a good thing.
All right. So, next up, we got some scientific/environmental news. So, over in Africa, they have what are called the baobab trees. Baobab trees are these big, thick trunk-looking trees. They've been around for many, many years. They're some of the oldest plants you can find on Earth. And they're very nice-looking trees, too.
Yeah.
But unfortunately...
like communal things.
Yeah.
People gather there, like, they're landmarks, essentially.
Yeah, they're very big. To African culture, they're a major deal. And we found out this week that of the 13 oldest baobab trees that they have that are known to exist in Africa, in the continent of Africa, not just one part of Africa, 9 of those have died in the last 12 years. And you can,
yep.
And we'll give you 3 guesses why, and the last 2 don't count.
Yeah, so these 13 baobabs, their age between 1,000 and 2,500 years old.
Mm-hmm.
They've been around for a long time. But yeah, so they're not 100% sure. They obviously have the assumption that climate change that has caused rising temperatures and increased drought conditions. That is the most likely thing, but obviously they have to do some actual work to just make sure whether that is or not.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so see, the trees that are falling over are at the southern range of the distribution of baobabs. What we believe is happening is the climate envelope in which they exist is shifting, and so we're not talking about the wholesale extinction of baobabs.
No, fortunately, they can still, like, I mean, they can still get seeds and plant these things, but...
Yeah
it's just going to take a really long time for them to grow up to that size.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I saw either here or somewhere else, they grow to, like, 30 meters tall.
Mm-hmm.
Which is pretty huge.
Yeah, about 90 feet.
I'm not sure how it compares to some of the stuff we have here in the U.S. The trees that are in California, I forget what they're
redwoods.
Called. Huh?
The redwoods?
Yeah, the ones they use for indoor.
Mm-hmm.
That whole scene is done in the California redwood forest.
Yeah. Those things, yeah.
Those are huge trees as well.
Those are so big, they are almost overwhelming in their size when
yep.
you first 30, see them.
30 meters is 98 feet and a bit.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yep.
Yeah, that's big.
Yeah, there are pictures of humans next walking by these trees. They're dwarfed.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They also have their fruit-bearing trees. See, people use the tart baobab fruit to make drinks and mix with milk for a yogurt-like food.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so they hold traditional religious ceremonies, communicate with their ancestors at these trees. Yeah. Or
God, I cannot just... I can only imagine what the natives are thinking.
Yeah.
Like, holy shit.
Yeah, the two of the dead and probably aren't too thrilled about that either.
Nope. Yeah, well... That's sad. But fortunately, we're not talking about an extinction scenario. They can be replaced. It just takes a long time. So
yeah.
This next thing was a potential extinction scenario.
Yeah, so out in Egypt, they found a mysterious unopened black sarcophagus, which, what does that immediately make you think of?
JoJo's Bizarre Adventure.
Yeah.
Or any number of Tokusatsu series that...
It's a mummy plague.
You thought I was just a regular mummy, but indeed it was I, Dio! Walk like an Egyptian, but that's for those who don't know, Walk Like an Egyptian is the Stardust Crusade, the I think it's called Stardust Crusaders or yeah. Whatever that section of JoJo is called. That's the ending thing they do for it. Not Yes's Roundabout, but which, by the way, isn't it awesome that stuff like that sort of came back because of that fucking anime?
Yeah.
Like, Yes's
cool
Roundabout
became... It's always cool how music becomes relevant over the weirder shit.
Yeah.
Queen became huge again in this country because of Wayne's World.
Yeah. Roundabout originally came out in 1971. You know, that's how old that song is. Yeah. But yeah, so they found this thing. But apparently there was no Dio, but there was a leak.
Yeah.
Which,
because the three skeletons found inside of the sarcophagus were inundated with sewage.
Yep.
Oh, dear.
Great. You know, I've always thought people was thinking about, you know what? I'm going to get back at you. I'm going to shit on the bones of your ancestors. Well.
Somebody did.
Yeah.
the populace of Egypt.
Maybe these guys were unwilling and they shit themselves as they were dying.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you well, know, that is something that used to happen back then.
Yeah. I mean, depends on what your last meal is like.
Yeah. Well, with all the feces they found in this thing, there was a lot of it. It wasn't this mostly red liquid too, or red colored. And did you hear that there are people who are actually wanting to pay top dollar to get a sip of this shit?
Because of course there are people who
corpus medicine, it's a thing.
Yeah, some people are not very bright.
Yeah, let them.
Go ahead. That's what Darwinism is for.
Thanos
yeah. But, yeah. So no Dio, thank God, but there is a whole lot of bones and shit.
Yeah, and probably, you know, if they can sort through that, a good bit of DNA evidence if it's still viable.
Yeah.
Figure out who these people were, maybe.
Yeah, yeah. So next up, next story, Adidas. It's not just a song that Korn put out back in the 90s.
Yeah, it's a shoe brand, apparently. Some people wear those.
Yeah, it actually is supposed to say, "All day I dream about sports." That's supposed to be what the... Of course, what was the joke everybody said? "All day I dream about sex." Yeah.
Yeah,
that's what I learned from Korn.
Yeah. It was a joke long before that song. Yeah. I'm pretty sure that shit goes back as far as the 70s. But, because my dad remembers that shit. And he's like, no, we used to say that back in 76. So, but, yeah, so Adidas, the sportswear brand, they have announced they're going to stop. They are only going to be using recycled plastics by 2024.
Yep. Yeah, so they already make shoes with recycled plastic, but they're obviously planning on ramping that up every year and sort of eliminate the use of virgin plastic is what they call it.
Yeah.
Sort of first-time use of, like, polyester and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, so let's see. Yeah, they say it would save about an estimated 40 tons of plastic per year, which is definitely a good thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so they have an apparel line for spring and summer of 2019 that will contain around 41% recycled polyester. And they're expecting a sharp increase in sales of its Parley shoes, which are made with plastic waste that has been intercepted before it reaches the ocean. While still a small share of its global sales, Adidas expects purchase to jump from 5 million pairs this year to... Jump to 5 million pairs from 1 million in 2017.
Right.
Yeah. So
that
they
may be a bit optimistic, but
yeah. But I guess as they wean off of the virgin plastic stuff, their sales will just keep going.
Yeah. Expect to see by the time 2050 rolls around, I'm pretty sure much of the first world is gonna stop using virgin plastic almost altogether.
Yeah.
Because it's filling up our oceans, and we've just now started coming up with solutions to deal with it. So.
Yeah.
Put some of those things to use, you know.
Yeah, I saw an interesting stat that there will be more plastic than fish by weight in the world's oceans by 2050.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's not good.
Yeah. So.
Featherfish.
Again, yeah. Well, they've already got some solutions for it now, and they'll probably be putting those to use in the next few years. So, look out for that.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so our next story. As you know, Pluto is no longer a planet, scientifically.
It's a planet.
But it will remain one forever. It will remain one forever in our hearts. Well, so as you could probably guess, NASA's still out there trying to find another ninth planet. Because, I mean, let's face it, man, when you've been raised for several generations talking about the nine planets of our solar system, it just feels weird saying otherwise. Well, they managed to find 12 new moons around Jupiter while they were finding it, trying to find one.
Yeah, so this wasn't NASA. It's a team led by Carnegie's Scott S. Shepard and a variety of other sort of astronomers around the world.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, they've been looking for the mysterious planet X.
Mm-hmm.
Since about 2014. What's that?
Don't want to go to Planet X.
No.
Yeah.
No. Bad things happen on Planet X.
Yeah.
Very, very bad things.
Yeah, and sort of while they were doing this, as I say here, Jupiter just happened to be in the sky near the search fields. We were looking for extremely distant solar system objects. So we're serendipitously able to look for new moons around Jupiter while at the same time looking for planets at the fringes of our solar system. Mm-hmm. So it just kind of happened to be in the way.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, they found these 12 new moons.
Mm-hmm.
See, nine of them are part of a distant outer swarm of moons that orbit it in the retrograde, or opposite direction of Jupiter's spin rotation.
Mm-hmm.
Which, yeah, it's grouped into, three distinct orbital groupings, and are thought to be the remnants of three once larger parent bodies that broke apart during collisions with asteroids, comets, or other moons. So, so now the total for Jupiter is at 79 moons.
That's a lot of moons.
Yeah, that's a lot of moons.
I mean, being the biggest planet, it has the most gravity to capture these sorts of objects into its gravity.
Yeah.
But yeah, now there are 79 moons. They have a picture here sort of showing the various rotations of them.
Mm-hmm.
They're all over the place.
Yeah, they're the Galilean moons that are real close. There are prograades that are a little bit further out, and there's these retrogrades that are going the opposite direction.
Right. All right. Well, that's awesome. And you got to wonder how many of those moons were once, you know, pieces of Jupiter.
Itself. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah. Well, yeah. Now you can't. If you're looking at Jupiter, now you can't use the old joke, that's no moon, because it probably is.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, next up. In a story that kind of makes me a little happy, Comcast has actually dropped their bid for purchasing 21st Century Fox. Instead, they're going to be focusing on Sky, which is... it's a good thing because I hate Comcast with every last fiber of my being.
Yeah, they came in. They came into the whole thing like, "We got fucking cash out the ass. Here you go, fresh cash." And like, holy shit!
Yeah, net neutrality was just killed, so we can do this.
Yeah.
Hey.
Yeah, and it's sort of the kind of crazy thing where Disney comes in, mostly dealing with stock.
Mm.
It's like, ah,
that's a lot of stuff.
Just offer you just fresh cash, tons of money, also probably pushing Disney's bid up a good bit. But yeah, they're focused on Sky. That's sort of the thing they most want.
The UK.
Yeah. Which did at least do a lot of like F1 broadcast stuff. I don't know if they're still doing it. So I know here in the US, ESPN is sort of... ESPN has taken it, and from what I've heard, they basically just air the base feed.
Yeah.
Occasionally without commentary on it. Like, they don't give a shit.
Yeah.
But yeah, they... let's see, they made a $31 billion offer for Sky in April. Fox is trying to buy Sky as well. They up theirs to $32.5 billion. Comcast said, no, we're going 34. So they're playing a leapfrog here.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's now...
kind of Disney is the one that actually wants this the most, because that completes their MCU, basically.
Yeah,
for the most part. And gets them a lot of other stuff as well.
Yeah.
Simpsons, Futurama... they get Family Guy, all that stuff, King of the Hill, a lot of their TV stuff as well. Which would fit well with what happened in the recent Avengers movie.
Yeah.
So they're like, oh, here's the reveal at the end of the second part. Hey, guess what? We got a ton of mutants out there.
Mm.
That can do lots of crazy shit somehow we didn't see before.
Hmm.
They just all happened to survive.
Yeah. Well, half of them did.
Yeah.
No, they all survived. They didn't come into existence until afterwards.
Mm. Yeah.
They're the cockroaches.
Yeah. Well, it's good that at least... Well, is there anything really good about this? Yeah, Comcast isn't getting it. That's the good part.
They'll be over at some point. We've been talking about this for a long time.
Yeah, it's like, we started talking about this, 4 or 5 months, half a year ago?
Yeah.
Like that. Yeah.
Now it's just Disney going through all the antitrust stuff.
Okay, so speaking of Disney, James Gunn, the guy who is probably the guy who brought us Guardians of the Galaxy, introduced that, basically made it, took what was a fairly obscure Marvel property and turned it into a global phenomenon. Pretty much everyone thought it was going to fail, and it ended up doing gangbusters.
Yeah.
Who
the hell's going to care about a tree?
And there's a raccoon that talks? Yeah. The hell
the
is
guy
this
named
thing?
Star-Lord?
Yeah. And then the movie comes out, and holy crap, it's amazing. But, he's not with Disney anymore. They fired him. And the story behind this is kind of, it takes a little bit of reconstruction. So the first thing you need to know is that James Gunn, before he signed on with Disney and Marvel, was an indie guy. His first few movies were with Troma. Troma, if you don't remember, are the people that brought us such things as the Toxic Avenger.
Yeah.
Yes.
And Tromeo and Juliet, Nuclear High.
Lots of edgy humor type stuff.
Edgy B-movie type stuff that still kind of stuck in the 80s.
Yeah.
But generally pretty good stuff. So, as you can imagine, his sense of humor has always been kind of edgelordy.
Uh-huh.
I mean, he's not like a 4chan douchebag, but...
Yeah, he's grown a lot.
Almost.
Yeah.
Yeah. So... Mike Cernovich, do you remember him?
Unfortunately.
He's the guy who brought us Pizzagate.
Yay.
And Gamergate.
He's just a boil on the ass of the internet that will not die.
It's on giving.
Yeah. Well, in response to, to the Me Too movement, he thought that not enough quote-unquote liberals were getting shit for it. I'm guessing, you know, in spite of the fact that Louis C.K. Come on, you know, it's just a bunch. He decided that James Gunn had to be the next douchebag to go down. So he started trolling tweets that go back about 10 years. And I will admit, they're pretty awful.
Yeah. Yeah, like, yeah. I would not say, like, there's any good there. I think he's definitely worthy of, at the very least, like, sitting down and talking to him, see if he's really grown since then.
Yeah.
Most likely he has.
But this is Disney we're talking about. And when you work with Disney, if you aren't careful, they will drop you like a bad habit.
Yeah.
Walt Disney could not work at Walt Disney these days.
No.
No.
And
but also Disney giving in to Mike Cernovich is the worst part of all of this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because that is a guy who has repeatedly talked about how he enjoys raping women.
Yeah, he is just a genuine bad person.
Yeah.
Like, there is
about how you can't rape anybody without force.
Mm-hmm.
Like, go ahead and try it. See, you can't do it.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't believe rape victims or any of that stuff.
Yeah. So unfortunately, James Gunn is not on Guardians of the Galaxy anymore. Whether or not he's still, you know, like, he's probably going to go back to indie features.
Yeah.
I mean, it's also completely possible that Disney will let this blow over and then rehire him on the down low, just so.
Yeah.
But both, either way, it's just Mike Cernovich is a douche, and I hate whenever he gets any kind of victory, no matter how small it is.
Yep.
And this is not a small victory.
No.
You got the biggest media company in the world to listen to him.
Mm-hmm.
I think they still have good options for Guardians of the Galaxy 3. Mm-hmm. Get the guy that did Thor Ragnarok.
Yeah.
Yes.
That guy's real good at humor.
Mm-hmm.
We'll get more Kiwi humor in it as well.
Yeah.
Because that was one of the best parts of Thor Ragnarok when I watched it recently. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Also, if you're on Twitter and you have old tweets, I recommend that you sign up for Tweet Delete, which will go through your Twitter feed and delete them all.
Yeah.
You can set like how far back you want your Twitter feed to go, and past that cutoff point, it will just delete them.
So, mm-hmm.
That's advisable. A good thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not just, you know, if you have like bad stuff to hide or anything like that. It's more like after 10 years, is the stuff that you tweeted about 10 years ago even relevant anymore? So
yeah,
you know,
it's not like Twitter really makes it easy to access that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
No, that's why you need that for that front that
like it always website. I try to go look at somebody's posts, like just keep scrolling down. It feels like at some point Chrome is just going to fall apart.
Yeah,
yeah,
yep, because it will.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. It's not a matter of it's a matter of when.
Yeah.
It will start slamming its hand on the mat desperately for submission.
No more.
Please, God.
Make it stop. All right.
Yeah. All right. So moving on. We got this news from Nick Cartoon and Paramount. They're bringing back Rugrats, folks.
Yes.
Yep.
And really, if there is a show that can still be relevant today, it's definitely Rugrats, because I went back and I recently went back and watched some of those old episodes, and it's amazing the type of stuff they were able to slip in under the radar.
Yep. Yeah, I always remember the episode where,
as was the case with most of Nickelodeon back then.
And I remember the episode where they grew up into adults.
Yeah, and then that became all.
Actual adults, like, going to, like, the paper pushing factory.
Oh, yeah, that
like, their
one.
Their concept of what adults did.
Yeah.
Was hilarious. It's like, that's more fun than what I do.
And that was part of the fun of that show, was that you got to see the world through their imagination, and it was usually pretty goofy. Like you mentioned that very same episode, them driving on the highway and there's like tanks and airplanes and stuff. in the midst of the traffic, like
Well, these days, not sure I put that past anything.
So they have put in a revival for 26 episodes for a season.
Mm-hmm.
The movie will be helmed by Paramount Players, mm-hmm. Which is their new film division, mm-hmm. based on properties from Viacom.
Hmm.
A live-action film featuring CGI characters. I don't know what that's going to be about.
Well said.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah,
don't count it out just yet. Say. Yeah,
at least they're still doing the animated episodes.
So. Yeah, the shows are animated. Bringing back all the original creators, Klasky, Supo, and Paul Germain.
Mm-hmm.
And produced in Burbank, California. Production's already underway. Dates, any of that stuff, nobody knows yet. Let's see. The Rugrats movie is written by David Goodman.
Mm-hmm.
So it's released on November 13th, 2020.
Oof, that's a bit far off. But
yeah, mm-hmm. I wonder. Let's see. Okay, I wonder what his history is.
I guess they want to give the series a little bit of presence before they get to the movie.
Okay, he was. Let's see. He worked on Futurama. It's one of the executive producers, as well as Family Guy and American Dad. So he's got a pretty good
record.
Yeah.
Which part of Family Guy? Like which season?
Let's see. He was one of the...
That's important.
Beginning its fourth season. As co-executive producer in season 3. It's like right there at the end of the first run,
there
beginning of the
fourth. Before it went to shit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Let's see. He wrote also... Let's see. He wrote for Star Trek Enterprise.
Mm-hmm.
But it's got some nice stuff there. He worked on the Orville. So he's executive producer.
If any of you guys have not seen the Orville, it is amazing.
Yes, it is.
And he's also president of the Writers Guild of America West. So definitely got some clout.
Yep.
Oh, he wrote for the
Alrighty then.
Okay.
But the important part is Rugrats is coming back. So there.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Man, just imagine those kids trying to react to freaking... Oh, God, they're just... The possibilities are endless at this point.
I thought we were babies.
Oh, dear. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they bludgeon the baby Trump.
Oh, God, yeah.
Please. But, all right, so...
Same voice actors and all that, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right, so next up, Lin-Manuel Miranda. Yep, he's still around, and we now know he's going to be making his directorial debut. No, it's not going to be Hamilton. It's going to be the film adaptation of Tick, Tick, Boom. Now, you're wondering, what's that? John Larson, the guy who was a creator of Rent, if you remember that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, this is the production he put on before Rent. And, of course, after Rent, he sadly passed away.
Yeah. Lin-Manuel Miranda was in a 2014 stage production of Tick, Tick, Boom.
Yeah.
So before Hamilton, he did that.
He did that, so.
Mm-hmm.
He's very familiar with the material, so, I think he has the qualifications to direct it.
He also has Brian Grazer, Ron Howard, and Imagine Entertainment's Julie O producing.
Okay.
So he's got some good people above him as well.
Yeah, and Lin-Manuel Miranda is hot right now thanks to Hamilton. So
Hamilton, Moana,
yeah,
there's a ton of good work. He did the theme song for the new Magic School Bus, which is
is going to be, and of course he is doing stuff for the King Killer Chronicles too. So
he's in DuckTales.
Mm-hmm.
So
he's been an actor for a long time off of, so it's, you know, he wasn't a complete unknown when they did Hamilton. It's just Hamilton came out around the right time.
Yeah. Hamilton came out and now everybody wants him as part of their shows or whatever.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right, next up, Netflix teased the third season of everybody's favorite Netflix show that isn't BoJack, and that of course is Stranger Things. We're getting it.
It's 80s as fuck.
Yep.
Of course it is. It's the new Starcourt Mall.
Yeah, this was It was certainly brought back a time when malls were a thing you wanted to go to.
Yeah.
It was so 80s, you can almost smell that.
Yeah, especially when you see, like, oh, here's, like, the old Gap logo.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the old Burger King logo. The Walden Books.
Mm-hmm.
Sam Goody, like, Zales, Radio Shack, like, all this shit.
Most of these places no longer exist.
Yep, and then they zoom over to an ice cream parlor named Scoops Ahoy, and guess who's working there? Steve.
Mm-hmm.
Which is definitely, like, if you need to remember what this is tied to. But, mm-hmm. Yeah. So this season is going to take place in summer of 85, which is the following year.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like potentially the way they end this trailer, saying, you know, coming next summer, seems like the next season might also be coming next summer.
Mm-hmm.
Might be taking their time with it.
Yeah.
Which is always good.
Yeah.
And you know what the worst part of all of this is? Mm-hmm. I've yet to watch Stranger Things.
Yeah.
You should check it out.
Yeah.
Got Netflix.
Yeah, I've got Netflix now, so I might as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's all like right. 8 episodes. Right. It's good. Yeah. Binge.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right, so next up with that, CW, as you know, they've got Arrow on there, mm-hmm. and they're sort of building another kind of alternate version of the DC universe in that little area that, you know, doesn't suck, and they've decided that they're going to start doing a series to join in the Arrowverse. Cringe. They're working on a series, and it's going to involve Batwoman.
Hmm.
Yep.
Specifically, Kate Kane.
Hmm.
Yep. Who is gay. Very much a social justice warrior.
Oh, yes, she is. Very yep. much. Especially when Greg Rucka was writing for her.
Yep. Yeah, so that's going to be out in 2019. We'll be joining the Arrowverse that has The Flash, Arrow, Legends of Tomorrow, and Supergirl.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it seems like if you thought Supergirl was a little bit too cutesy and all that, mm-hmm. I assume this will be in sort of the opposite direction of that.
Yeah, it looks like it's probably going to be.
Yep, and also be sort of the first part of that TV universe that is going to be set in Gotham.
Mm-hmm.
And has nothing to do with the actual Gotham show.
Nope.
Yeah.
Which is also getting its own spinoff. It's like a
prequel.
But yeah, let's see. They're going to have Carolyn Dries mm-hmm. as the writer and executive producer. She has a long history at CW, worked on The Vampire Diaries, the new Melrose Place. Mm-hmm. Also worked on Smallville, so she's got some chops there.
Mm-hmm.
Greg Berlanti, Sarah Schechter are executive producing. Jeff Johns is also executive producer on this. It's another Greg Berlanti show. He produces, let's see, Black Lightning, Riverdale, their upcoming All-American football drama.
Mm-hmm.
He has 7 shows on CW, as well as he does the God Friended Me and The Red Line for mm-hmm. CW. No, that's outside of CW. Those are CBS, Blindspot at NBC, You for Lifetime, Chilling Adventures of Sabrina on Netflix, and Titans and Doom Patrol for the DC Universe streaming service.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Busy, busy guy.
Yeah.
All right.
At this point, it's kind of just people Nothing are not hiring prolific. Him to because he's got a lot Thinking of good shit.
Yeah.
All right. Well, then. Moving on from there, DC Universe, this is going to be like their streaming service, right?
Yeah.
All right, so DC Universe is their streaming service. This week, they finally spilled the details on pricing, what they're going to be offering, stuff like that.
Yep. As you know, San Diego Comic-Con has started.
Mm-hmm.
And so DC Universe, being a comic thing, has revealed a number of details. So it's going to be a hub for all things DC. They're going to have comics. Mm-hmm. They're going to have an encyclopedia. Also have, I guess, like community features, so you can talk to other fans. So you won't have to go to like Reddit or any place like that.
Which is good. You can avoid Reddit.
Yeah. Along with that, it's going to have TV shows and movies. Let's see. Yeah, it's going to be $7.99 a month or $75 for an annual subscription. And if you get in early to pre-order, you get an additional 3 months for free. So yeah, if you like what you see, you can try it out. Or you can get a little bit of bonus. They're supposed to be starting like a beta in August.
Yeah.
So you can try it out early as well.
Yeah.
The TV shows and movies seems like the obvious way to go, but I think the really smart play here is actually having the comics in there as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a very smart move.
Yeah, so they have, so they're partnered with Warner Brothers Television for the five original shows, which includes Titans, Doom Patrol, and Swamp Thing for their live-action stuff, and Young Justice Outsiders and Harley Quinn for their animated shows. And the movies, at least as far as what they're talking about, is supposed to be the animated movies. But yeah, along with
Batman Ninja.
Yep. Along with that, they're going to have comics about 2,000 to 3,000 titles. It's not going to be the entire backlog.
Well, I mean, the entire backlog of DC goes back about like freaking since before.
Yeah.
Before World War II. So
Yeah, so they're gonna kinda do like the Marvel Comics service where it's sort of a rotating selection.
Yeah.
Which if they're smart they can do some really cool stuff with some of the best runs they have in there.
Yeah.
You can also check out this stuff on obviously your phone, tablet, and TV.
Smart TV apps.
Yeah. So yeah, they're gonna have let's see.
Okay.
Have people, you know, read through the television stuff. Sort of like two pages, one page. They'll say you'll be able to blow up individual panels to 4K resolution to show off that artwork.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is, and it's also some of the older stuff probably not going to be so nice.
Yeah.
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 Wow, those lines are really jagged.
Yeah. And also, it's going to be interesting to see how people take to some of the weird shit that happens in some of that older stuff.
Oh, God, yes.
Because obviously, as society changed, comics kind of changed.
Yeah.
And also didn't. They got real weird about things.
Because Sean Baby, they
tweet out various comics he reads and like all the stupid and awful shit that he finds in them.
Yeah.
About abuse.
Remember that one, there was that one character supposedly one of the first openly gay superheroes to appear in a comic was a dude who was like flamboyantly gay and he died because he was bitten by an AIDS infected vampire named Hemogoblin.
Yeah, see, this is how people learned
certain
about
eras
this,
just couldn't handle certain topics.
Mm-hmm.
Nope. You added just.
I think that was Aver. Also the same. That was also the same series that brought us Snowflame. You remember Snowflame, don't you? The supervillain that was powered by cocaine. Snowflame feels no pain. That was his tagline. Snowflame feels no pain.
Yep. Wow. Yeah, so they also talk about the community stuff. Let's see, they are still working on it, as they say. They pointed to discussion forums, ability to create and share lists of favorites, new sections, encyclopedia entries, training publications.
Yep.
To sort of just help people sort of find some of the coolest old stuff they can look at in the comics, but also trying to keep it as like a healthy way of having fan engagement. Because they say they're going to aggressively patrol discussion forums to ensure that users aren't turning the place into a cesspool of toxic behavior.
Yeah.
Which, huge surprise.
Yes.
To have comics.
Yeah. Oh, God.
You know what else DC owns?
What's that?
Mad Magazine.
Yes, they do. So, hint, hint.
Yeah, so, let's see. Like some of their TV stuff and movie stuff that is not part of the original content for this. It seems like mm-hmm. they'll have ways of renting or purchasing that stuff through DC yeah. Universe. So they may not bring all the like DC Universe movie stuff or cinematic universe stuff into this service, but they mm-hmm. might be able to offer like ways of purchasing it.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, frankly, not having Batman v Superman is not a bug. That's a feature.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
You know, and they're not going to offer the theatrical version.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
All right. Well, and now for our last story of the night, and believe us, we got some opinions. We got the first look at the new trailer for DC Universe's show about the Titans. And we have problems. Like, it's just, how can you screw this up so badly?
I don't know, but somehow they seem to have managed.
But here
it
we fucking
well.
Are.
Mm-hmm.
not a very auspicious start for the streaming service we were just talking about when the first thing they release is a trailer for this, what looks like to be an abomination.
Yeah.
Frankly.
Now, I will give them credit for Raven. Raven actually does their whole thing with Raven is pretty awesome. I'll give them that much.
Hmm.
Everything else, though?
Well, thanks.
Yeah. Apparently, at some point, they thought Robin was always Red Hood.
Yeah, revisionist history, apparently.
Mm-hmm. No. Also, Starfire... Where to begin? Starfire... It's not... for the record, it's not because she's played by a black woman. Starfire has always been dark-skinned. It just makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
But they kind of made her up to dress like a hoe. And... I mean, Starfire has always been very, shall we say...
scantily clad.
Yeah, because there's not really a nudity taboo where she's from. But the difference is that Starfire, her fan service thing is that she just hasn't lived with that much of a nudity taboo. So the way she dresses is just natural. It actually makes sense. So why would she look
like
a... Yeah. So why would they make her dress like a streetwalker? Like, that just doesn't make sense.
Yeah. I mean, she's, like, supposed to be alien royalty, if I recall correctly.
Yeah, she is.
Hmm. You know, she would have a little bit more taste than that, I would believe.
Yes, she would. Just for God's sakes, man, how did they screw it up this badly? You had... some 40 years of freaking comic book lore to work with here.
Hmm. We have concerns.
Yeah.
Let's just put it that way.
Yeah, the problem I have kind of with this trailer is just kind of all over the place.
And dark.
Like, I would just kind of like to see like a scene of this and see how it looks
plays out.
Actually.
Yeah. Also, it's dark. Like, too dark. Yeah.
Hmm.
It's the Teen Titans, man. They're not... I mean, I know that the Teen Titans could get pretty dark at times because, you know, they were one of the first superhero teams to really tackle the heavy shit head on. But this is also the same team that has Beast Boy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Beast Boy is based...
They have, like, a line of, like, about him talking about how there's a monster inside him.
Yeah. No, that's not Beast Boy, damn it. Hmm. That is not Changeling. Beast Boy is basically a living Looney Tunes character in...
yeah.
You know, that's not who he is. You know, the reason why his relationship with Raven is so, you know, for lack of a better word, sweet, is because they're complete opposites and yet their relationship somehow works.
Yeah.
These are just... two edgelord kids who found each other. This...
Yeah.
So, that's true.
So two thumbs up then from everybody.
That's best of the year. IGN, yeah. 10 out of 10.
Hmm.
And honestly, that joke doesn't even work anymore because IGN is much more... but it's not nearly as what they used to be, so... How could they screw this up so badly?
Or more importantly, why?
Like, who did they... What did they think?
What we need here is motive.
Yeah. Like, were they trying to kill this series from the beginning? Were they trying to strangle it in its proverbial crib? Like...
Maybe set expectations really, really low so that when they finally do create a good series out of this again, because I'm sure they will eventually, it'll be that much more sweet because of all the shit we've had to put up with leading up to it. That's the only thing I can think of.
Yeah, well, if you've seen what the DC universe as far as the movies have been so far, they're not that smart.
I haven't bothered.
You're not missing much.
Yeah. Except for Wonder Woman, everything else is shit.
Yeah.
Well,
that went places.
Yeah, just if you want more, just look online. Pretty much everybody is taking a giant shit on this thing.
Yeah.
As they should. Like, I mean, I'm normally not the kind of person to be that much of a stickler about it, but none of this makes sense.
No.
It really doesn't. It's just so out of character. But whatever. All right.
Yeah.
Well, I guess we got a show there, folks. So I would like to remind all of our listeners that if you've got a question, comment, something you want to write in, have us read on the air, you can get in touch with us at letsweekenders@gmail.com. That's letsweekenders@gmail.com. We've got it written down in the show notes. Also, on top of iTunes, you can find our little bit of unscripted shenanery. I just made up a new word, shenanery. You can find us at Apple Podcasts, to Google Play, RSS, archive.org, basically any places where delicious oral sweetness like ours can be tasted by your ear tongues. That was a sentence I just said. Yeah. So, with that, I have been your host with the most, Brandon Perkins, and for Filippo D'Onofrio, Patrick Mifflin, and Chris Elogi, das vidanya.